This is the Serrano Brothers Podcast.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Serrano Brothers Podcast. Today, we have with us the Reverend Kirsten Moore. Welcome. Kirsten, you know, the whole thing we're doing here is so that the Sierra Pacific Synod can get to know the pastors and churches better. And so let's start off with, tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from originally? What's your family look like? Tell us about that.
Originally, my first 11 years were in the suburbs of Chicago, Elk Grove. And we moved out to the Bay Area, eventually Walnut Creek, when I was 11. But also being in Chicago, like for where I'm from, even though my address was never North Dakota, I would spend a couple weeks every summer there with family. So I've got these Midwestern roots, but then the Bay Area. And then after college, I was in Santa Barbara for 4.5 years and then moved back up to the Sacramento area.
So you were in SoCal for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody has to work in Santa Barbara.
Why not you?
Right. Like, absolutely.
If somebody has to do it,
I know.
Might as well be.
I decided to sacrifice, take one for the team. I did youth ministry there. So.
Oh, did you?
Where did you do that at?
Trinity Lutheran in Santa Barbara. Beautiful church, the top of the hill, on La Cumbra Road.
So, who was the pastor there?
We went through a couple while I was there. John Wilker was there when I was hired. Mm-hmm. And then he officiated at our wedding and retired the next Sunday. And I'm sorry, the boxer is getting into stuff he shouldn't. Hold on. Oh, my goodness.
It's funny because we can't see any of this happening because of your.
Yeah, we have a 1.5-year-old boxer.
Oh, funny.
Who likes? I put out a bone for him, but no, he's finding.
Kirsten, were we in Southern California together?
What years were you there? When did I move up? 2002-ish, I think.
Okay.
And then I've been in a couple different churches in the Sacramento area. And Gloria Day, and they had a church and school they have since closed. And then I was at Lutheran Church of the Incarnation in Davis. And had a lot of my seminary life through there doing youth ministry and but also my internship, and made an exception, had my teaching parish there too. Experience.
Wow, that's rare but very cool that they were able to do that.
I'm not going to get into the drama of some of the complications, but I had some wonderful allies that knew my story and knew that this was a good healing growing place for me.
Well, that's good. Yeah, and I think there is something too that there are people, especially I'm a big believer, if you're a person who's worked in the church, like I worked in the mm-hmm. church my whole adult life, like it's okay for us to do internships where we work.
Yeah.
I think that's totally okay because we know we're only going to be there until we get called somewhere else, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I also had worked at St. John's in Sacramento for a couple of years too. So I'd been at a number of churches in very different settings.
Right, right.
That's awesome. So, yeah, and as for family, immediate family is my husband, and I have a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old and the 1.5-year-old boxer.
I have a 16-year-old and a 13-year-old, and like, you know, they say it goes by quick, and it goes by quick. Like, they're just like, I feel like this is the age where they're like becoming like more mature, and like it's really interesting to see how that changes, you know, in just a few years.
Yeah, the older one's always been more organized than I am, so that's fun.
That's awesome.
The younger one's just like me. I'm like, oh, I can't get mad at her.
All right, when you like see me. When you see them, when you see yourself in them, and you're like, oh, I did this.
Yeah,
that's me. Yeah.
I see her messy room. I'm like, yep.
That's funny. Between Jeremy and I was always the more organized one. And Jeremy was not so organized. And so, like, when we shared a bedroom, like, I would have clothes all lined up in a row, all nice, you know, in the closet. And Jeremy's would just be like a pile of clothes that was like up the side. It was hilarious. Do you do anything outside of the church? What are your hobbies, passions?
You know, being mom, sometimes I feel like taxi driver is my main hobby right now. I take Milo for a walk every day. I love to, we go on vacation every year, and snorkeling is my thing. And I have a full face snorkel mask where I talk to the fish and I make friends with octopus. And yeah, that's, if I could do that all the time, I would.
That's really cool.
Do you have some places that you especially have loved to snorkel in?
Yeah, we always go back to the same place, and it's a small little town on the inside of Baja, on the peninsula, on the Sea of Cortez. And Jacques Cousteau called the area the largest aquarium in the world. And right at the resort, you can go out and snorkel right there.
Wow. And what's the name of the town?
I don't want everybody to go there.
We don't have that many listeners, all right? It's just my mom who listens to this podcast.
It's called Loreto. It actually has the oldest, and then the second oldest is just outside of town, missions in all of Baja and California. So every time we go there, I force my children to go to the oldest one again and again. They're like, Mom, stop.
That's
they
cool.
have this statue of Jesus in a glass casket.
Uh-huh.
And it reminds me of Snow White.
That's awesome. Got some of that Catholic piety going on.
Yeah.
Do you, when you do this, what got you into snorkeling?
I went, when I was a teenager, I think I went for the first time in Hawaii on a trip with my mom and my grandma. And I really liked it then. I remember at first I saw the needle-nosed fish and they were really scary. And then on different, like, honeymoon and other vacations, just every time we go, it's so peaceful. And I just talk to the fish, and I make friends. I really made friends with octopus this past couple of years. So.
That's really cool. That's awesome.
My family makes fun of me. They're like, where's Mom? Oh, she's out with her octopus.
I think that's really, I mean, that's so great that you have something that you love and you're just like, this is what I love, you know? And like, and I think all of us should have something like that, right? Like, that's just our thing, you know?
Yeah.
Your thing snorkeling, that's awesome.
I love it. It's just expensive, and I don't live someplace where I can do it all the time, so.
Sure. Have you ever tried snorkeling out here?
No.
Just not that.
Too cold. I don't like getting cold. I served my 11 years of my life in the cold.
and I think the water's not clear enough out here.
Yeah, my blood has thinned out.
Yeah. All right, so we're like in the throes of Lent, coming up on the very end of Lent. Has there been a particular spiritual discipline that you've taken on during Lent?
Not so much this year. One year I gave up chocolate and I was just grumpy. It did not make me feel closer to Jesus. And so sometimes I've tried to do things, where I'm reading more scripture, where I'm adding in, and that has been helpful. I do little silly things, like my nails are purple during Lent. And I, you can see by my roots, I don't get my hair done from until Maundy Thursday. It's like a letting go of vanity kind of thing. So there's things like that. I'm maybe more intentional with my walking and, you know, prayer life a little bit more. We did this thing on Transfiguration Sunday that was really meaningful for me. And it was fun for the congregation. It'll tell you a little bit about our congregation. So I gave everybody a strip of 10 star stickers. They were like silver, shiny stars. And I told them, put one on, like your hand or your face or your shirt. And then throughout the week, give them out to 9 other people. And when you give them out, tell them that they are loved and that they are worthy. And my people started giving them out in worship to each other. And while I was still speaking in my sermon, they had fun. And so I'm seeing, you know, all of these people coming up for communion with like stars all over their faces.
That's really funny.
And all over their shirts. And I got to Friday and I realized, I'm like, oh, I need to practice what I preach. I still have like 7 or 8 stickers left. And I was going to Costco. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do it. And I gave out stickers to different ages, different, you know, everything. Everybody was so happy to get a sticker. This one woman had me take a picture of her with her sticker, and she had a shopping cart that was filled super high. And I said, you deserve a sticker for that. And she was all happy. And it just, you know, it's not your typical Lenten practice. And technically it was before Lent, but it was really meaningful to Absolutely. Spread that joy.
I have a theory that I don't know if I've talked about on this, but that all of the stuff that works for youth group works with adult church. And I find myself doing like literally the same things I did with my youth group for 13 years with my adult church for the last 9 years. And like the transfer over is exactly the same. It works. Do you find that same kind of stuff?
I do. We on Maundy Thursday, and I think I might have done it some other time, do that Alka-Seltzer confession. Do you know? I got that from Agape, David Shear, at a youth retreat, where you take an Alka-Seltzer and you write on it what you want to confess. And then you go up and you put it in, you get an extra big baptismal bowl if you don't have one. And you put it in and you watch it dissolve. And you can write with pen or pencil on Alka-Seltzers.
I really like that. That's a great idea.
And yeah, so they seem to like it, or they just humor me and do it. I don't know.
But people remember that. See, that's the thing. It's these experiences that it's these moments that they go, oh, I remember that. Whether they like it or not, you know, they could be like, yeah, Pastor silly or whatever, but they'll remember. And that's, you know, Sunday after Sunday, you know, there'll be moments that stand out for people. And I think that's a cool experience for them, right?
Yeah.
Is anybody's congregation picking up the Synod's 40-40-40 thing? Do you all even know what I'm talking about? Sinners. Right. Read your Synod newsletter.
I skim it, but I missed that.
Okay, so here's the thing. I only know about it because my parishioners get the Synod newsletter and are doing it. And they're like, Pastor, you know, like it's like decluttering.
Oh, I think I had forwarded that on our Facebook page and then promptly forgot because it was too far before Lent when it came out.
Yeah.
The one where it was like a contest with other...
Yeah, exactly. And there's like a giving component.
Yeah.
You can see exactly how much I do it, right? But my people have picked it up. I was just wondering if anybody else have done it.
I shared it on our Facebook page and promptly forgot. Yeah, sorry.
Did you grow up Lutheran?
I did. I'm born and bred. I came from a mixed marriage where my mom was raised Presbyterian. But that was by default because her father was a PK from a Unitarian pastor.
Oh, interesting.
And he died before my mom was born. Not my grandfather, but my great grandfather. And then my maternal grandmother was Catholic. And so I guess they compromised on the Presbyterian church in town. And when my parents got married, it was more important for my dad to be Lutheran than for my mom to be Presbyterian. And so we were at Presbyterian churches, or we were at Lutheran churches. And
why did you stay Lutheran?
It had become part of my identity, and probably more so as a teenager. So we moved out to Walnut Creek when I was 11. And the Sunday morning we were supposed to join St. Matthew. My father had a heart attack the previous Wednesday. And they called, 2 o'clock Sunday morning and said, he wasn't going to make it. And Pastor Jack Namey beat us to the hospital. And our family, my grandparents and aunt had flown in. And that was when my dad died at 3:30 Sunday morning. And then Jack went on to do two services after being with us. And to me, that's just such an amazing example of pastoral care. I don't know that I could be that good if somebody was, I don't know. I hope I wouldn't sleep through the phone call. And Jack gave my mom some really good advice. I'm an only child and she's an only child. And she said, we've just been out here. Do we move back? Do we stay? And he said, why don't you give it a year so you're not making any rash decisions? And she did. And in that time, our church family embraced us. And that's where I really learned about church family. Like, church is supposed to be family. The way those people invited us to their Christmas parties and Thanksgiving and Easter festivities and just everything. They really, it became family. It really was church family. And that church has grown and changed, and not all the same people are there. But I was really grateful at Bishop Jeff's installation. He stood the same place that my mom remarried. He stood the same place that I was confirmed. He stood that same place that we baptized my oldest daughter, and it felt like home again. And so that's been part of it. It feels like home. Our youth group was super active. I was part of the leadership group for it. We had wonderful Bible study and lessons, and I was at church all the time. I was probably could be considered a church nerd. And then I went to Cal Lutheran, where to me it felt like a expanded youth group. And that just really became who I was. My junior, senior year, we had a class that was about our personal theology. And is Dr. Jarvis Strader. He was amazing. And we had all these questions that we had to learn about what other famous theologians thought and then write down what we thought. And that was really hard for people because you're not just regurgitating, you know, this is what I was told in Sunday school. You have to really flesh it out and write what you really think. And so in a way that was, that paper was another confirmation of, oh, I really do believe this. This really is who I am. And it's just who I am. It's, we're saved by grace. God's love is for everyone.
So it, like, take us forward then, like, what made you decide to become a pastor then? Kind of tell us about how that came about.
I fought that. So I had majored in religion because someone said, major in what you love. And I figured, oh, I went to youth group. That'll be an easy A. And it wasn't. And I was really, when I graduated, I was thinking of getting some kind of job in some sort of social work type thing. I wanted to make a difference, but I couldn't figure out what. And I had some interviews and nothing felt right there. It just, you know, you just got that feeling like, no, that's not right. Yeah. And I went down to visit my now husband. He was finishing up. He took the 5.5 year plan, playing baseball at 3 different schools. And, while I was down for, I don't know, a weekend or something, 3 separate people asked me why I wasn't doing youth ministry. Kind of like, what, why? Like, we don't get it, why? And some of the people didn't even know me that well, and they weren't standing together when they were asking me. And it really started sinking in. And so for that 5-hour drive home, I had a long talk with God where this feels like you're talking to me through other people. And I had never thought about doing youth ministry because my youth pastor and youth director were on this high pedestal that I had never imagined it. And I think sometimes, not always, but sometimes when you figure out where God's calling you, everything just clicks.
Yeah.
And so that was the time before the internet was a huge thing. And I ended up calling a couple synod offices. I think I must have called the Sierra Pacific Synod office and asked them if they knew of any youth ministry openings. And then I called the SoCal, Southern California West. I'm not quite sure. The name changed. For the Synod. And they said that there was a full-time opening in Santa Barbara. And so I called them and I put my resume in and went down and interviewed, and it just clicked. And so I was there for 4.5 years, and then we moved up. My father-in-law had terminal cancer, and it became clear that it was terminal, and I would have spent, you know, done anything to spend one more day with my dad. So, like, okay, we need to be closer to family, and they were in Lodi, and so we moved to the Sacramento area, and I did youth ministry at St. John's and then went over to Gloria Day. And at one point I just felt this like stirring, like restlessness, like something's not enough. Something has to change. There's something more. And then again, I had one of my friends who was a non-practicing Catholic. I thought that was funny. Told me You really should go to seminary. I think it's time for you to become a pastor. Like, you don't even go to church. And I brushed it off. And then I remember my stepdad said something to the same effect. And this was within like a few days. And I'm like, this is getting strange. And that restlessness became heightened.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, God, here's the deal. If this is really from you, then I need one other person to tell me that they think that I should go to seminary within the week. And it can't be this person, this person, this person, anyone who had ever hinted at it before, ever. And I think the next day or 2 days later, we had some sort of youth event that was with the school. And there were one or two people where they turned in their checks to pay for the event and put it on an envelope that said Pastor Kirsten. And I said, no. God, that is not, that doesn't count. And the very last day, my husband and I were in a car, or going someplace. He said, you know, yeah, maybe you should go to seminary. You'd be a better pastor than that. we won't. And I was like, profanity came out of my mouth. Because I had never imagined that he would ever encourage that.
Mm.
And so it was kind of fitting that he was.
So, yeah, so this is a warning then to our listeners that if you're going to throw a fleece down like Gideon, right, or Pastor Kirsten, then you got to listen to what God tells you to do, right? And Kirsten, what church are you at right now?
I'm at Calvary in Rhiolanda, and I want to give credit to Bishop Dave Nagler. I had been a part of an invitation to service. It was a event for how you might be called into ministry, and I was all for you're called into youth ministry. That's great. That's valid. And he was our speaker that summer and said something to the effect that when you feel God calling you, it's sort of like when you have to throw up. You can try to just sit with it and hold it back, or you could just go to the toilet and stick your finger down your throat and get it over with.
Wow. Wow.
But it resonated, and I remember it. Okay, so what were you?
My that was hilarious.
So you're in Rhiolanda.
Yes. So I have the picture of the original sanctuary behind me. You know, if you can kind of say that. Yeah, it's a 100-year-old church, Calvary Lutheran. And, well, 101 in a month. And wow. Where Rhiolanda is just outside Sacramento, just north, kind of parallel to the airport. And when you're there, you feel like you're in a small Midwestern town. There are chickens that cross the road. There are horses that come on by. But we're also 15 minutes from the Capitol, and it's, you know, a lot of our people, their fathers or grandfathers helped build the church with their own hands. And part of what I like about this picture, if you see behind me, there are vultures sitting all over the church. And in indigenous cultures, vultures symbolize renewal. Not death, but from death comes life. And a lot of them roost in a tree right a kitty corner from the church every night. And so they're there sunning themselves. And I like that symbolism of, hey, we've got renewal going on.
That's cool. That's cool. How long have you been a pastor for?
I was ordained August of 2014. So okay. I think I'm right about 9.5 years.
Nice.
and at Calvary. So we did a combined ordination and installation. And Jeremy was there.
Nice.
Was I?
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to remember what your church looks like. Well, it was 10 years ago. How can you expect me to remember? I've been there once.
All right. I think you read a little thing.
Did I? Well, thanks for having me a part of your service. I appreciate it. 10 years ago, dude. Goodness. What are you proud of that Calvary does?
I am proud of that they truly are a welcoming church, where when someone comes in, they don't love bomb where you're like, "Hey, go away," because I've seen that happen. But they are really, truly welcoming to all people, all walks of life. If someone comes in and it's pretty evident they don't have a home, we just make sure they get food. Teenagers come in and they worship with us and we feed them and then they run away, and that's okay. They've been coming back. All walks of life, and they truly are welcoming. And I've asked people who have come later, I'm like, okay, some churches say they're welcoming, but you find out they actually ignored everyone. And everyone's like, nope. They really made me feel welcome. So that is one thing I'm proud of. I'm proud that they're willing to try new things. We're changing up things for Maundy Thursday again, and I changed it up a few years ago, and they're like, okay, we'll try it. They're willing to be silly and wear stars on their forehead when they come up for communion. That they are willing to try to change and try new things. And then little ministries pop up. We have, after worship, we have someone who teaches music lessons for anyone who wants them. You don't have any age. You don't have to have any talent or experience. And he does that. We have people who decided, you know, I want to start making some quilts again for Lutheran World Relief. And suddenly we have a Tuesday morning quilting group. We used to do a community meal once a month that had to stop for COVID, and we tried to restart it after, and it just wasn't happening. Our own people were the people there, but no matter what advertising we tried, it wasn't working. So they took that grant money and they're making care bags that we all carry around in our cars and give out whenever anyone is in need. So they do a lot of good things.
That's awesome. Do you have any ways in which your congregation connects with like local other congregations or ecumenical or interfaith kind of stuff?
We did. Pre-2020, there still is a Nazarene church and a Southern Baptist church. There was a Methodist church. They just closed about a year or two ago. And another Baptist church, and we called ourselves Reach, the Rio Linda, Alberta area churches. And we would do a few things together, including there's a Rio Linda, Alberta country fair every year in the fall, and we would have worship in the park together. That hasn't happened since 2020. Things have kind of scattered, but hopefully again, we will at some point. We consider each other colleagues. I appreciate that when we did those services, the Southern Baptist Church, their pastor used to be Missouri Synod. So he was the one who actually would back me with wanting to have communion and have the words of institution. And he understood how important that was to me, and knowing that both of his current and former denomination don't usually support women in ministry, and yet he was supportive of me. It means a lot.
Yeah, that's cool.
So
we have one theological question that we always ask of pastors, it is, how do you explain the gospel?
The gospel, the good news. In one way, it's, the first four books in the New Testament, but also it's the good news that God loves us no matter what. I've been saying in my last two sermons, totally, completely, unconditionally, no matter what. That's the good news. And that God's not going to let us go. It's about God loving us, not us loving God. And there's freedom in that.
I like that. I like that. Is there anything else you want us to know about your ministry?
My people are awesome. they're good. It feels like home, and it's really fun when new people come in and start realizing that it's their home too.
Yeah.
More recently, it never started until 2021, as far as I know. But we have a really active, we host a AA group and an NA group. And all of a sudden we're getting new members from that group, and it's a breath of fresh air, and they are amazing, wonderful people. And I love how they're just fitting right on in.
That's awesome. That's rare too, that you get folks from AA or NA kind of joining congregations. But that's awesome that's going on. Good. That's very cool. Okay. So the last thing we like to do is ask 10 kind of rapid fire questions. Just answer kind of like the first thing that comes to your mind. Okay.
Okay.
What food can you eat every day?
Chocolate.
What's your favorite movie genre?
Oh, remember you asked this one. It depends on my mood. It really does. Because I love like The Lord of the Rings, and then I love romantic comedies when they're good, and mysteries, and
Cool. Salty, sweet, or savory?
All of them. In North Dakota, in Grand Forks, there's a place that, Woodman's, and they make hand-dipped Red River Valley potato chips. And yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, in addition to the Bible, which book would you bring with you on a deserted island?
One I haven't read yet. That's what I was thinking. Or some sort of survival manual, so I can figure out how to survive until someone rescues me.
What fills your cup?
Cuddles from my girls. They're getting to that age where they don't always want to cuddle as much, but I take it whenever I can get it.
And what depletes your cup?
Paperwork.
What is your favorite holy place?
I would say I have two out in the farm in North Dakota, just being out there. Or if I go to the church and the cemetery where I've got my spot saved, I've danced on my own grave. Those places feel holy to me. Also, floating in the Denzante Bay in Loretto, that's a different kind of holy. You looking at that beauty.
What's one good piece of advice that you've been given?
My mom told me once that not everyone you meet are you going to like, and that's okay. And not everyone is going to like you, and that's okay. Treat each other with respect, and you're good. But sometimes I think we get caught up on wanting to be liked and feeling like we're supposed to like everybody, and we need to love everybody. But
yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. Yeah. What does rest look like for you?
I'm not floating in the bay in Mexico the rest of the year. Probably sitting on the sofa with my dog in my lap, watching a movie with my family.
And on that last day when you meet Jesus face to face, what are you hoping that he's going to say to you?
Oak Ridge Boys has this song. My dad used to play this tape, and they have a song that said, "Come on in. You did the best that you could do. There's a little bit of right in every wrong. There's a little bit of me in you." And yeah.
That's awesome.
It's a dad memory.
That's really cool. Kirsten, thank you so much. Pastor Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for this opportunity, and thank you for doing this.
This is
so good to, like, as I've been watching them, to get to know everybody else. So thank you.
Thanks. This is the Serrano Brothers Podcast. Peace.